God has really blessed me. You know, he let me work in D.C., let me work with EIB in Hollywood, in Silicon Valley. And he's shown me through all those experiences that there is one problem and one solution, and that's why we do this show.
Welcome to A Disciple's View with Todd Herman.
When the God of the universe created the world, he didn't snap his fingers or wink his eyes. He spoke. The Lord said, "Let there be light." Because we believe, we speak about the happenings in this world as we remain mindful that our true home is with Jesus Christ and his kingdom. I'm Todd Herman. Welcome to A Disciple's View. There's really, to me, one story today, and it is about a mentally ill woman who is also a lawyer with the ACLU, making an absurd series of arguments in front of the justices and some comparisons between some of the justices and their responses. But there is a subtext to this. About 9 years ago, I became aware of the first group of so-called detransitioners. These were young women who had grown to resent and want, or resent what medical people did to them, and to regret being conned into believing that they were men. They lived in Portland, Oregon. Some of them had been surgically and hormonally altered, some had not. They all had equal regrets, and they went public. And this was long before anyone else would talk about this stuff. It was back in the day when, and I never heard this from Rush. I should make that clear. Rush Limbaugh, for whom I filled in 150 times or something. Rush never said anything like this. But some very famous national conservative talk show hosts, I guess it would be fair to say, lectured me. When I was a local host in Seattle, don't talk about these things. You sound like a crazy person. There were the political operatives who said, don't talk about these things. This is why we lose elections. We can't win on the social issues. Don't talk about these things. And it was an uncomfortable time being the only person who talked about these things. So I became aware of these young women, and I reached out to them and said, hey, could you come on the radio show? One of the things they made clear in this discussion was, yeah, one of us will come on, but we can't solve parents' problems, and parents want to reach out to us and have us solve problems and talk with their kids. We can't. We're saying what we can. I got to meet one of these young ladies in person. She was 22. And we met in Seattle. She's up there for an event. She had gone through the hormonal surgical route. And remember, this never happened then. When we were speaking, she held up her hands and she said, I'm like a Seinfeld episode. And she got teary-eyed. She goes, you know the episode I'm talking about? Yeah, I knew. I don't know if you ever watched Seinfeld. Do you know the one she was talking about? Man Hands. She was talking about the Man Hands episode. The lead actor, Jerry Seinfeld's character, had met a beautiful woman, and he was always meeting beautiful women. It was a very ungodly show, and he was always sleeping with women, and he really liked this woman, but she had man hands. And she said, of all the things no one told me is that I'd have man hands and that my jawline would be absurd from testosterone. Of all the things I want back, I want my hands back because I have to look at them all the time. It's the one part of my body I can't hide. I can hide the scars from the double mastectomy. I can save up enough money to have the skin of my chest stretched so eventually I can have fake breasts. She never had the bottom surgery, thank God. She didn't know she could have kids. And the response that she got from the so-called doctors who did this to her was, well, I guess you were never trans. You should have spent more time thinking about it. I guess you were never trans. The community, you know, the so-called trans community said the same thing to her. Well, you were never really trans. At the heart of this case in Washington, D.C., is a question. Exactly what is being so-called trans? Exactly what is it? That's the heart of this case. The answer is evident to anybody who will stop and think about this. It's like being sad or happy or apprehensive or agitated or depressed or excited or anticipatory or regretful. It's a feeling. Sometimes the feeling passes. Most often in kids, it passes when they're allowed to grow up. It's a feeling. It's not a biological happening within the body. It's a feeling. It's an emotion. That's at the heart of this in Washington, D.C., this debate over the law in Tennessee. You are paying a U.S. Solicitor General to make absurd arguments to this court. The mentally ill woman who has gone through apparently the chemical process of trying to appear to be a man, Chase Stranglio, an ACLU lawyer, wrote a guest essay in the New York Times. May it please the court, so-called trans health saved my life. So this is a woman who as a 20-something, started hormones. 20. She wants kids to do it much earlier. She's said that kids at the age of 2 know they are so-called transgender. Know it, not feel it. Kids at the age of 2 don't know the difference between up or down. They don't yet know that down hurts. They'll learn because of a feeling. That's the heart of this. Let me present this scenario just to explain, in, I think, a better sense, the absurdity of this. There are 2 kids, they're twins, same age, boy and girl. The boy's name is Roger. The girl's name is Debbie. They've got the same parents. They look a little bit alike. They both go to the pediatrician's office, Roger and Debbie. They're twins. They're both 14. They each see the same pediatrician. Roger goes first. And he's in the room with the pediatrician. And the pediatrician shuts the door. And he's doing a checkup, and the pediatrician says, so how are things? And the boy, Roger, 14, says, well, my gender identity is much more masculine than my body. I don't have the right body. I need hair on my chest. I need more mature genitalia. I won't get specific on this network, but you can guess what I mean. I need six-pack. I need very defined, much larger biceps and pecs to fulfill my gender identity, because right now I look too masculine. Or, pardon me, I look too feminine. I don't have pubic hair. I don't have a beard. I don't have hair on my chest. I don't have bulging biceps. I don't have a six pack. I don't have pecs. So I need you to give me 2,000 times the amount of testosterone that would ever be in my 14-year-old body. And I also want you to approve plastic surgery to install until I grow them on my own. Plastic six packs and pecs and biceps. And the pediatrician says, oh, well, son, I can't do that. You're going to age and puberty will happen. I know it's uncomfortable. And I know that there's probably boys around you who've got pubic hair, et cetera. And man, that's hard. It really is. It's uncomfortable. Here's some things that you could maybe cause your body to produce some more testosterone. We can talk about how you eat and maybe eating some more red meat would help with that. And robust physical activity can help with that. But it would really just be speeding up God's plan. So I couldn't give you that, son. 2,000 times the amount of testosterone that would ever belong in your body. That could do great damage. Because your body's still developing, and that could do great damage to your prostate gland, and it could shrink your testes or cause them to never grow, in which case you couldn't reproduce. And so, gosh, you know, I couldn't do that. That's what the pediatrician says to Roger, the 14-year-old boy. His sister, Debbie, a 14-year-old girl, is next into the room. Roger leaves. He's in tears. He's upset. The doctor said no. And Debbie walks in. And the doctor shuts the door. And how are things, Debbie? And, well, I've learned that I'm not really a girl. I'm a boy. So I need you to write me a prescription to give me 2,000 times the amount of testosterone that would ever appear in my body naturally. And get me on a path to have my breast removed and to have bottom surgery to create a fake penis. Okay. All right. Good. Brave and stunning. It's a brave and stunning thing you've done, Debbie. You're to be rewarded. We'll get in touch with the Children's Hospital Gender Clinic. We'll get that process started. I'll talk with your parents. I'm proud of you. Did I just present an absurd scenario? Nope. I mean, yes, but not in the mind of a guy named, or a woman named Chase Stranglio, a woman who pretends to be a man. Now, I can't say that Chase agrees with that specific scenario, but Chase agrees and is pushing for Debbie to be able to be flooded with those hormones. How on earth could Chase then say, but not Roger? His concept of gender doesn't count. You can't go around putting more testosterone into boys. They've already got it. You can only put 2,000 times the amount of testosterone into girls because they don't have it. That's the absurdity of what we're hearing. And there are a couple of examples of what DEI has done to the Supreme Court. One woman in particular, of course, on the Supreme Court should have already recused herself because her intellect or her lack of honesty already disqualified her from this trial, these oral arguments. So we'll compare that to something Samuel Alito said. Samuel Alito has done some good work in this. We'll also talk about the importance of why Justice Alito made sure to get on record from this mentally ill woman, this ACLU lawyer, that being so-called trans is a feeling. Vitally important. Let's pray for these people. Because God have mercy. We'll come back at a Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. Thanks for listening to Disciples View. I'm Todd Herman. We're talking about, I think, the major story. There's a whole series of stories. There's a coup in South Korea that was started and was over very quickly. The French government has fallen. You have the region of Georgia rejecting Putin. We have Canadians, young Canadians, standing up against Trudeau. I mean, it's a volatile world. So there's a lot of things to cover, but we should expect a world of volatility because it's a fallen world. And because the Bible warns us about times such as these. But this case in front of the ACLU, to me, is the story. Because of the specter of a mentally ill woman who has been hormonally altered to appear to be a man, who made the decision to alter herself in her 20s, as people do. I've got a family member who made that decision. And it is working for that family member. And I love that family member dearly. I won't see that family member enough. And it's a mental illness. And I wrestle with depression. And that can be a mental illness. I haven't wrestled with it for years. Recently, I am. I think it's more situational than anything else. Perhaps inability to, or unwillingness to really have the Lord fill me with joy. Perhaps that's it. It's pride, maybe. But that specter of a woman masquerading as a man who made the decision in the 20s, or age of 20s, saying a two-year-old knows they're so-called trans, is the specter of the day to me. There's also the comparison between some of how justices are responding to this. Some of the most absurd words ever spoken by Supreme Court justices have been spoken in this exact oral argument. But let's start here. This is the ACLU lawyer. This woman who pretends to be a man is the ACLU lawyer arguing for two-year-old toddlers to be able to demand wrong sex hormones in surgery.
I would say is nobody has to provide this medication to adolescents. These are not doctors being forced to provide this medication. These are doctors who are wanting to treat their patients in the best way that they know how, based on the best available evidence to us. And these are young people who may have known since they were 2 years old exactly who they are, who suffered for 6-7 years before they had any relief. And what's happening here, it's not the kids who are consenting to this treatment, it's the parents who are consenting to the treatment. And as a parent, I would say, when our children are suffering, we are suffering. And these are parents who love their children, who are listening to the advice of their doctors, of the mainstream medical community, and doing what's right for their kids, and the state of Tennessee has displaced their judgment.
So much to deal with there. Let's start here. She is lying. If this becomes a civil right in the state of Tennessee, all doctors will be forced. If they provide any hormonal or surgical treatments to anybody, they'll be forced to do this, just like doctors have been forced to perform abortions. It shouldn't surprise anybody that a woman pretending to be a man working for a satanic organization, and the ACLU has gone full satanic, is making an argument like that based upon a core lie. It's not the children consenting to this, it's the adults. If that's the case, then that's abuse. If an adult has made a decision for a six-year-old, you don't get to be a boy any longer. I'm going to have you shot up with estrogen and testosterone blockers and have your penis and testicles mutilated in ways too horrific to describe in detail, but involving cutting an 18-inch wound between your legs that will never heal by design, forcing you to wear a wedge between your legs when you sleep at night. Well, then that's another issue, isn't it? If it's not the kids consenting, it's the adults. And if it is the kids consenting, someone needs to come and explain to me how a parent should respond differently if your child comes along and says, I want bunny rabbit ears. Well, wait, it's clear that they're not bunny rabbits. It's clear that they're not the opposite sex. Anyone who's ever had kids has seen them in pain. And sometimes the answer is not, well, I'll get you what you want. If you've ever had a child who's had any form of body dysphoria, generalized or other, you've been through it. I've been through it with my daughter who developed an incredibly potent eating disorder. And she told me, I will never be happy until I weigh 99 pounds and I look Asian. Oh, and by the way, is there anything you could do to have my bones shaved? My bones are too thick. I want them shaved. I'm also too tall. Could you have a surgeon cut pieces of my legs out so I'm short? Yes, of course, honey, we'll do that. Because you're hurting. So I will go and make sure that you can get some permanent hair dye. We'll have your eyes permanently dyed brown and altered so you appear to be Asian. And yes, Daddy will go find a surgeon who will shave your bones down and cut part of your legs off so that you're shorter. Yes, Daddy will do that because my little baby hurts. That is insane. And anyone who did that would be insane. And if you just wind it back down to the insanity before the Supreme Court with this woman pretending to be a man making these arguments, it becomes even more insane. Because it's reached the level of the Supreme Court. So Justice Alito forced the mentally ill ACLU lawyer to admit so-called gender identity is not an immutable characteristic.
Does the category of, does transgender status apply to individuals who are gender fluid?
I think that the distinguishing characteristic is to have a birth sex that does not align with, or a gender that does not align with one's birth sex. So it may include people who have different understandings of their gender identity, but I think it is still the distinguishing characteristic of a birth sex and a gender identity that are incongruent.
Are there individuals who are born male, assigned male at birth, who at one point identify as female, but then later come to identify as male, and likewise for individuals who are assigned female at birth, at some point identify as male, but later come to identify as female? Are there not such people?
There are such people. I agree with that, Justice.
So it's not an immutable characteristic, is it?
Well, I think people's understanding of it shifts, but the evidence shows that there is at least a strong underlying basis. And I think the normative reason for that particular consideration is whether or not this is something that someone should or could change and whether they should have to change it in order to receive constitutional protections. And I think transgender status squarely fits within that.
It's an incredible Alice in Wonderland moment, isn't it? Justice Alito is saying, can people change their mind? Can a man who thinks he's a woman change his mind and say, oh, no, wait, actually, I'm a man? And the ACLU lawyer says, yeah. And then Justice Alito says, well, then it's not an immutable characteristic. And the Alice in Wonderland moment is the ACLU lawyer is pretending. She says, well, should they have to change? No one's saying they have to change. What sane people are saying is children who are confused change their minds about everything. You will not be the same person at 6 as you are at 8, let alone 28 or 35. I just watched a dear friend's marriage fall apart because one of the marital partners could not relate. His wife was 22, 21 when he met her, 35, 36 now, was a waitress, is a surgeon, was hot. A hot surfer, born in Mexico, lived in California, is a mother of four who's written two books. And he couldn't adjust. She changed. She didn't need him. So he found someone who did. People change. They can change their minds. He did. On the topic of gender, what Alito has shown here is that it used to be that civil rights were developed around immutable characteristics because those are things you can't change. So you can't ban women from having a job because they're women. You can't ban black people from a hospital because they can't change being black. Creed has been added to that, one's religious views. Now that's different, of course, because you can change your religious views. It used to be that you were born into a religion, and to some degree that's still true. But what Alito is painting this ACLU liar and lawyer into the corner of is admitting it's not immutable. This is not an immutable characteristic. It's not a biological characteristic. It's not your height or your so-called race. It is a feeling. And feelings change. So Alito goes through a very intelligent line of questioning. The least intelligent person ever to sit on the Supreme Court, a 100% confirmed DEI nominee, a woman who testified under oath she does not know what a woman is, compared banning the sexual and chemical mutilation of children to banning interracial marriage.
Being drawn by the statute. That was sort of like the starting point. The question was whether it was discriminatory because it applied to both races and it wasn't, you know, necessarily invidious or whatever. But, you know, as I read the statute here, the case here, the court starts off by saying that Virginia is now one of 16 states which prohibit and punish marriages on the basis of racial classifications. And when you look at the structure of that law, it looks in terms of, you can't do something that is inconsistent with your own characteristics. It's sort of the same thing. So it's interesting to me that we now have this different argument, and I wonder whether Virginia could have gotten away with what they did here by just making a classification argument the way that Tennessee is in this case.
Ketanji Brown Jackson, the least intelligent human being ever to sit in the Supreme Court, on the Supreme Court, just explained that telling children you do not have a mature enough mind to make the decision to have your genitalia sliced apart to the point of being inoperative, not being able to reproduce, and to have your body flooded with 2,000 times the wrong sex hormones that would ever appear in your body, you're not mature enough to make that decision, sorry, is the exact same thing as telling an adult who's white and an adult who's black they can't marry. One is a feeling a kid has. The other is the race of two adults. Remarkably insipid. Desperate. Remember that she is on the Supreme Court because she is black and a woman, period. That was the starting and ending point of her qualifications, according to figurehead Biden. He promised, I will put a black woman on the Supreme Court, even if it's a woman who doesn't know what a woman is. I hope you can see why this is the story of the day, the specter of all this. Samuel Alito continued to make great points.
In your petition, you made a sweeping statement, which I will quote. Overwhelming evidence establishes that the appropriate gender-affirming treatment with puberty blockers and hormones directly and substantially improves the physical, psychological well-being of transgender adolescents with gender dysphoria. That was in November 2023. Now, even before then, the Swedish National Board of Health and Welfare wrote the following. They currently assess, quote, that the risks of puberty blockers and gender-affirming treatment are likely to outweigh the expected benefits of these treatments, which is directly contrary to the sweeping statement in your petition. After the filing of your petition, of course, we saw the release of the CAS report in the United Kingdom,
which found a complete lack of high-quality evidence showing that the benefits of the treatments in question here outweigh the risks. And
he went on to quote page 195 from the CAS report that indicates that getting these wrong sex hormones and surgery does not prevent these suicides. And the liar from the ACLU said, well, completed suicides, as if that makes things better. Justice Sotomayor, the second least intelligent person ever to be on the Supreme Court, compared slicing apart the genitalia of children to taking an aspirin.
Cannot eliminate the risk of detransitioners. So it becomes a pure exercise of weighing benefits versus risk. And the question of how many minors have to have their bodies irreparably harmed for unproven benefits is one that is best left.
I'm sorry, Counselor. Every medical treatment has a risk. Even taking aspirin, there is always going to be a percentage of the population under any medical treatment that's going to suffer a harm.
Taking an aspirin is the same thing as having your genitalia mutilated. Justice Sotomayor, the wise Latina, she called herself. We'll come back on The Disciple's View. Appreciate you listening to Disciples View, talking about the oral arguments in the case of the attempt to block Tennessee from protecting children from wrong sex hormones and surgery. This is breaking news. The killer of the UnitedHealthcare CEO, Brian Thompson, apparently left some notes on the ammunition he used to kill the man. Ammunition used to gun down UnitedHealthcare Chief Executive Brian Thompson Wednesday in Manhattan was engraved with the words, deny, defend, depose, multiple news outlets report. These words echo the title of an obscure 2010 book about tactics insurance companies use to avoid paying claims. They're the strongest evidence yet that Thompson was killed for his job running UnitedHealthcare, a massive health insurer. A friend of mine, you've heard in this program, Michael Rourke, is a retired Special Forces operative. He sent me word yesterday. He looked at this video. He doesn't think it was the work of a professional. I've read that other people do think so. I've read some military blogs saying that the shooter apparently used subsonic rounds that would not be as easily heard. Of course, there was what euphemistics call the silencer. They don't silence guns. They suppress the sound, but they're not silencers on the weapon, the calm nature of the shooter getting in and getting out. And now apparently there are images of the alleged shooter that have been revealed prior to the shooting that got these. So perhaps this guy's going to get caught. Seems almost impossible for him to get caught, but apparently surveillance is everywhere. Praise God for the ability to catch this guy. I do pray for the family. And it's understandable when insurance has become all-powerful and is really what determines whether people live or die. It's understandable that people can become upset and insanely upset and aggressive against them, but dang it, thou shalt not kill. We shall not. We've been talking through the oral arguments in Washington, D.C., which is a specter of insanity. We are right now in our country debating whether a child's confused emotions are a child's civil right. How else can this be explained in a way that can really boil this down to the utter absurdity that it is? Maybe it's this. If a child can petition the court to have their feelings turned into medical solutions, anything can be done. I've given you the example of an anorexic girl who has a 4% body fat. That's a level at which your brain is at risk of dying from lack of fat. She looks in the mirror. She says she's fat. All the evidence says, no, you are not. You have 4% body fat. You have not enough visceral fat inside your body for your organs to not crash against themselves. You are bordering on having seizures. But she feels fat. Why would she not be given a stomach staple? Well, it could kill her. Right. It could harm her. You can extend this to the bizarre in that case. You can wind it back down a little bit. Let's say the girl is at 12% body fat. Then we staple her stomach. Then we provide her Ozempic or carb blockers because she feels fat at 12%. That's well below average for girls. But her feelings say she's fat. You can boil it down just a little bit more if you like. You go to 10%, 19% body fat. And again, you can make the species argument. I was born in the wrong body. I was meant to be a chimpanzee. I want fur. Again, there is no difference. Adults making these decisions is one thing. Children making them is another. And the specter of this woman pretending to be a man, arguing to Supreme Court, where Justice Sotomayor compared unchanging wounds to the body of taking an aspirin. That should end this trial. And yet it won't. I'm hoping that we get the right ruling out of this, but I don't trust John Roberts because he stands so often to defend pharma because he worships institutions. I think John Roberts, before God, worships the Supreme Court. He wants it to be seen as this great, great body that he will sometimes vote with liberals or with deconstructionists to show that, oh, I'm not an ideologue. This isn't a conservative issue. This is an institutional issue. The institutions of public health and Children's Hospital and Marriage Bridge and any hospital that performs these procedures on children is utterly captured. Our U.S. Solicitor General's office in attacking Tennessee is captured. The ACLU is captured. And it might be that our military is captured. I do want to touch on this because I think his nomination might be at deep risk. Nominated to be Secretary of Defense, Pete Hegseth spoke about what President Trump wants from our military.
Wonderful process to go through and meet with senators and talk to them, especially members of the Senate Armed Services Committee, whose passion is the Defense Department, and our warfighters, to hear what they want to do to make sure that department is properly oriented for the threats of the world and make sure that we're putting the warfighters first. That's what Donald Trump asked me to do. Your job is to bring a warfighting ethos back to the Pentagon. Your job is to make sure that it's lethality, lethality, lethality. Everything else is gone. Everything else that distracts from that shouldn't be happening. That's the message I'm hearing from senators in that advise and consent process. And it's been a wonderful process.
It's been a wonderful process. Well, that's one way to put it. I read someone other day, I think it was this morning, Pete Hegseth's mother went on Fox News to defend her son. She was on there to respond to a statement, I think an email she'd sent him saying you're an abuser of women. Hey, you know what? If your mom's calling you an abuser of women, I'm sorry. That's scary. I want to support Pete Hegseth. I do. I think he could be a great Department of Defense head, Secretary of Defense, because I believe we need an outsider to address the utter and clear corruption of a Pentagon that has never passed an audit, of generals who offered in public to commit treason in concert with the Chinese Communist Party, of a military that is teaching soldiers that Americans who read the Bible and vote conservative are domestic terrorists. So Pete Hegseth's mother went on Fox News and said, he's a different man now and it's a different time. Gives me deep worry. And President Trump is apparently considering Ron DeSantis to step in on that. So we'll keep you up to date on that. On this program, we thank the Lord for placing supposedly wise people on tall towers of shaking sand with our feature called The Tower Babbling.
You know about the biblical truth of the Tower of Babel. A Disciple's View presents The Tower of Babbling.
When Kamala Harris wins, I'm going to get pregnant and then have like 50 abortions.
That Donald Trump will become the 47th president of the United States.
No, no, no!
Three sound bites as per normal on Tower Babbling. It's almost always three. Here's former White House spokesliar and current MSNBC paid liar Jen Psaki talking about Hunter Biden being an unregistered foreign agent of a Ukrainian energy company.
He's a private citizen.
Okay, but then so do you consider that the Russian oligarchs who control, or the Ukrainian oligarchs who control these, they're all private citizens as well?
We certainly right? wouldn't put them in the same
category.
No,
I'm not suggesting that. I'm not. And
she was, at the time, she was still answering questions for the White House. She was still negotiating with MSNBC what she was going to get paid. Even after she made the agreement to work at MSNBC, she continued to work at the White House without ever saying, oh, by the way, I should tell you all, I'm an MSNBC employee in a month. Fascinating. Second soundbite in today's Tower Babbling. The current White House spokesliar didn't have any lies in her binder of lies to sufficiently lie in answer to this question.
He's saying his own Justice Department is broken, Corrine.
He believes in the Justice Department. He believes that
after
there was...
After saying all that, he believes in the Justice Department?
This is his words. He said this. This is the president saying
he
this.
He just said it's infected with politics.
I said I would not interfere with the Justice Department's decision-making. I kept my word.
She tried. It might be the most sincere she's ever sounded. Apparently, she is capable of some sincerity, I guess, when her entire reputation is burning down before her eyes, even with the Mockingbird media. Last soundbite in today's Tower Babbling. The current White House spokesliar did a little bit better on this question, but that is a very low bar to clear.
President-elect Trump has likened this to the case of the so-called January 6thers, the people who were imprisoned because of their role in January 6th. What do you think of that argument? And do you think that that's a fair parallel?
Today I'm going to talk about the pardon. We've been very clear about January 6th. The president has been clear about that. He's spoken to that many times before. What we believe in this particular case is what is unprecedented is the way that his son was singled out.
His son was singled out. That's an interesting view. His son, who was an unregistered foreign agent, caught on video he made himself committing felony after felony after felony, who was selling access to the White House, exposed to top secret papers his dad stole as a senator, then a VP, who committed gun crimes on video, who is the son of a guy who pretended to be against guns in hands of people like him, was singled out by waiting 7 years to have any attempt at accountability on this at the same time as he owed the IRS how many millions of dollars? Yes, he was certainly singled out. And that's a wrap for today's Tower Babbling.
That was the Tower of Babbling.
Whoa! That is news.
On a Disciple's View.
On a personal note today, I'm sorry if I've seemed a little bit obsessive about the topic in Washington, D.C. And can I share with you why? I guess I will. I said it's a personal note. It's my sister. My beloved sister. Her kids are same-sex attracted. And I dearly love both of them. And no one's going to harm them when I'm around. And she's terrified. She's terrified of the Trump administration. She believes that President Trump is the worst of all people. And she and I have not spoken now in about a month. And she was kind, loving, said, I love you, Todd. We just need to take some time apart. It's this. She could not vote for President Trump because, she hates him. and thinks he's a horrible person. In fact, the devil. And she said to me, I'm trying so hard to square your willingness to support him with the man I know you to be. This is the magic of the wedge issue. That one issue that keeps people from voting for someone like Trump. There's the personality. My sister believes that he's a sexual assault, serial assaulter of women. If I believe that, I couldn't vote for him either. That's why I was just talking about Pete Hegseth. If your mother says you abuse women, you might abuse women. And with my sister, it's this. That one issue for me is the chemical and surgical mutilation of children. And it's not, quote, just the children. It's much more. It's truth. I've watched too many parents kowtow to their kids to say, yes, 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 you are, in fact, a girl, not a boy. And I've watched the ruin because of where we used to live. It was so prevalent. I've watched people in their jobs utterly miserable. There's a woman I know who was a very high-level HR executive with a very big company. Her retirement was all in that company. One day she was told, it's not enough that you agreed to plan this event celebrating the so-called trans flag. You need to celebrate it. You need to carry the flag. You need to speak at the event. You need to come out and say men are women and women are men. She drew the line there and said, I can't do that. And they said, you're fired. You're not going to vest any of that stock. Bye-bye. So for me, it's that issue. In the beginning was the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Because we believe, we speak. Because he first loved us, we speak his word. We walk in the path of Jesus to make disciples of all nations. Until we all speak again, may the peace of God that surpasses all understanding rest upon you and your families. On behalf of Randy and AFR, I'm Todd Herman. This has been A Disciple's View.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.